is done. Keep this in mind. Yesterday, I want to demonstrate, I want you to walk out of here understanding that the mathematical model that general relativity produced dealing with gravity, space, and time predicted operations and functions of how stars work. It also predicted the life cycle, how stars grow and should die, and what the masses are related to. And it made predictions of these things called white dwarfs and neutron stars. And I showed you through a variety of pictures, even though these strange objects have strange properties, our telescopes, visual as well as radio, have pulled together pictures of exactly these things. Pulsars were actually the neutron stars that were predicted. These planetary nebulas were in fact the white dwarfs that were predicted. And it's the same equation that made the predictions along those things. And we've seen white dwarfs, we've seen neutron stars. The next step is, after we get something that has three solar masses or greater, it says it's now going to collapse the neutron star to the strange object, which we call a black hole. Now, let's just go. Now, this will be very interesting. When we talk about black holes, when a lot of popular science books talk about black holes, there are three perspectives that you can talk about. The first perspective is somebody far away watching what's happening. They watch a star collapse into a black hole. They watch somebody fall into a black hole from a far away distance. They're the weenie scientists. They're nowhere near a black hole. Right? They're far, far away. Right? Those are the quantum systems that the Schwarzschild method basically likes to use. It basically converts everything to the far away guy, because the far away dude can get a big picture of what's happening. The other location is the guy falling into the black hole. So sometimes they get the best picture of what's happening. They're actually in what we call a low fall, free fall situation. They're free falling into the black hole. The third dude, right, is what we call a shell observer, or sometimes an accelerated observer. They're the person in the rocket ship outside the event horizon with engine going full blast, so they're not moving relative to the black hole. They watch, they can see the faraway guy, or they can watch the guy falling in pass by them. So there are three different observation posts when we talk about black holes. And we try to pick the best observation posts to give the coolest, the sexiest picture of a black hole. Some of them are boring. So if we're going to say something boring, we're going to sit there and say, now I'm going to use this perspective. And I will try to show you how they all three interrelate and work in. So watching a star collapse from a black hole, from a safe distance, the far away view. And as you can see, that it says, if you watch a star collapsing from a black hole, light emitted from the star, because the star, neutron star, collapsing, there are the type of stars that, one of the masses of the three that will collapse into a black hole. You'll see that it might need to be redshifted, like stretched. And it would get dimmer by a factor of 2 every 20 microseconds per solar mass, i.e. the bigger the black hole, the faster the star would seem to dim. And that kind of makes sense. Remember yesterday we talked about general relativity and how when you're down low on the ground, the clock runs slower than when you're up high. Now, if my clock is swinging back and forth, releasing electromagnetic waves, it goes slowly, right? And as it goes slowly, it stretches, so that you can visualize what's happening there. Also, because of the time getting slower, it seems to freeze. So what would happen is, you would see, if you were out far away, you would see this star start to collapse, start to change into red, get dimmer and dimmer and dimmer by a factor of 2 every 20 microseconds per solar mass, and it seemed to slow down and seem to freeze. And they would both coincide. So what would happen if you just see it kind of slow down and disappear? Like watching a star from the far away, would be kind of cool because you watch this bright yellow thing, a bright white thing, depending which frequency you're looking at, and it would all kind of turn to red, small, your finger, kind of slow down, and then just seem to disappear into a sort of black ball. Right? So you can see that effect over there. By the way, these equations, on the hand, I've been using those equations. These are some of the equations you can play with. Plug in numbers, create yourself your own graph, what it would look like. How long does it take? Luminosity, how bright would it seem to be, depending on the mass? Oh, remember, you keep seeing these E's pop up. Okay, what about some dude riding the surface down? From perspective, right? Now, if you're riding the surface down, it wouldn't be fun. Because for you, your star is collapsing, getting more and more denser. For you wouldn't see anything really happening outside. You're just going down. And all of a sudden, the gravitational forces become so intense, right? The space-time, the bending of space. So it's time, but that is for sure, you'd be feeling bending of space, you become so intense that you would be crushed. You'd become one and part of the singularity that becomes the star. So the star itself would be crushed to a mathematical point, which we call a singularity. It's a point that has infinite density, but zero volume. Figure that out. Right? So, and you would be one with the star, which is not pleasant. But in doing that, I got some interesting explanations about it. In doing this, there's a point that you wouldn't know about, which is called the horizon. And we actually have two horizons, an absolute and an apparent horizon. All you need to know is once you got the singularity, the two horizons are one. The yin and yang. So one starts out and goes small, one starts smaller and goes up, and they match. And once they match, you've got yourself what we call Schwarzschild radius, the event horizon. It's the horizon that we talked about. You wouldn't notice anything about it. You get a boring trip. You're just getting crushed to a singularity. Along with any friends that you have, you can basically go along with you. And it would be very fast. So let's kind of talk about the anatomy of the black hole. Most people talk about a black hole, and they talk about the size. Well, all they're talking about is the size of this horizon, the event horizon, the Schwarzschild radius. That's the size of a black hole. All, well not all, but most black holes have a point singularity. Now, think of this, an horizon is a location, just a distance from the singularity where the escape velocity is the speed of light. The singularity is a location that had infinite density, zero volume. So there's nothing really there. But there's nothing really there at the event horizon, just the distance. So where is all the energy of the black hole? It's incorporated in the space-time stretching that's over there. That's the black hole. Okay, it's a combination of the two pieces. Nobody ever talks about the third piece, the photon sphere. All black holes have at least one photon sphere. It's a distance. Actually, 1.5 times your Schwarzschild radius, where any light that is coming tangential across this way, across the singularity, across the black hole, would actually stay in perfect orbit. And it creates this photon sphere, and we'll talk about that. There's some interesting cool stuff with photon spheres. So when we talk, yes.
What exactly is tangential?
Well, it means a tangent. That means if you let me answer the question. We're saying that you ask, what's tangential? I suppose it's a tangent. There's the curving of my surface. A tangent means that it is perfectly that. It just glances, just pings it, right? It doesn't go through it, just pings it. So that's a your structure of a black hole. Yes?
Sorry, you just said that it has at least one photon spin. How can it have more than one?
So my if that some more slides, I'm sure you want to have two.
Okay.
Yes. Because everybody talks about one whatever, we have a whole bunch of them. Okay. And, but this is the easiest one to understand. This, the one I'm talking about, the one with one photon sphere, the one event horizon, the singularity, which is a point, is the solution to the Schwarzschild, which is kind of the bigger ball version. The other ones are more exotic, but it's like math way up here. Okay. So a photon that would orbit, come in, right? And as we can hit the laser pointer. Photons will come in and bend. Some of them that come inside the event horizon are going in. Some of them at one and a half will actually orbit perfectly around. Because that's the speed, the speed of light is what is required to keep it at that distance. In fact, if you could take a camera, right, if you were small enough, because remember, it's a mathematical distance, one and a half Schwarzschild radius. If you were small enough, you could stick your head inside like this. You would see the back of your head. Hey, because the light would come over here, come from the back of the head, come right around, hit you in the eye because it's going in perfect. And you imagine, look in your mirror, you move toward your back of your head, move your way back and move away. Oh, some interesting, cool stuff that happens inside there when you're inside this photon sphere. But it's a distance. Remember, and the problem with light is a wave, and if part of the wave goes outside the photon sphere, it's going in toward the horizon, and if it interacts and goes out, it can actually act up in space. But it needs to be a perfect tangential to fit this imaginary, not imaginary, this photon sphere, but it's a finite distance. A singularity, let's talk about a singularity. Right? You say the word, some of you played with it. Within the singularity, matter is infinitely compressed to a region of infinite density. At the singularity, gravity is infinite. Not an infinite in here. Right? Space-time has become infinitely curved. At the present time, science, we have no tools. Right? We have no tools to describe what's happening within the singularity. Right? This is the realm of maybe the quantum people and quantum gravity people to try to explain what's happening. I've got no tools from a general relativity perspective. All the laws of physics lose sense. Once you're dividing by zero, everything goes to perfect. Right? You try to be calculating a BDE. At a singularity, space and time cease to exist as we know them. The laws of physics break down singularity. It's not really possible to envision something with infinite density and zero volume. This is where yesterday's talk was playing. These are the next steps. We're playing with what happens if we pop from stuff for negative energy. How can we work within this strange? What sort of rules can I have just before? It's very, very close. So we've got this singularity. This is the typical embedding diagram that you see, and some of you kind of work it. This would be the gravitational well, right? And remember, this funnel thing is facing at all angles. This would represent the horizon, where the escape velocity is the speed of light. And since nothing can move faster than the speed of light, once you're inside there, you're following these little blue things right down to the singularity. Mathematically, it really says something unique. It says the properties of space and time. Do you remember, we're talking about space-time? The properties of space and time switch roles when you cross the horizon. Right? When we're outside the horizon, time for us only goes in one direction. Okay, time never goes backwards for us. It always goes in one direction. Once you cross the event horizon, space component of space-time can only go in one direction. And that was down there. Those Penrose diagrams, you remember those funny things that you saw report on it on screen yesterday? Right? Now I've got some explanations, some baby explanations of how those things work inside the handouts. But those things are trying to show you, once you're in there, you have no choice but to go to the CLR. There was no way to get out. The only path was up. At the up path was that funny yellow and black bar, which had a singularity on the top of that. All right, traveling into a black hole. So, see if you can figure out whose perspective you're looking at. As the ship approaches a black hole, the ship is elongated by the variation in gravity. The ship is also gravitational redshifted as the end closes to the black hole. The ship will appear to hover forever at the edge of the hole. So, pass. Now, where are we? We're outside, right? We're outside. In the ship, though, is the next line, right? You wouldn't even know. It would be, now, depending on the size of the black holes, right, depends on if the stretch will pull the ship apart. And we'll talk about that in a few. But for you, you don't even see this barrier that we call the event horizon. You're just going into something that looks very dark. I got some images from this perspective later on. So you pass in, and your ship would start to feel the stresses, what we call tidal acceleration. But from the outside, and I picked this little Borg cube to roll the Star Trek, seemed to be in yesterday. A Borg cube, stretched, redder stretching, because the light is closer to the black hole, closer to the singularity, and therefore it stretched further when it comes out, so it appears to us redder. All right, here's your first question. Here's the formula. Some of you may have looked at that. You are at 1.000001 times the event horizon circumference, right, which is CB. CB is the circumference of the black hole. Then one day for you would mean how many days for the rest of the universe, or somebody even way far away. Do you remember time that's all? If you were at one, now if anybody need a calculator, you do this yourself, so need calculators, just raise your hand again. So, see if you can do the, should we take you a couple of steps to the calculator? That's your, what they call the circumference of your black hole. Okay, but you're 1.000001 times that distance. So, certain things you want to cancel out very nice and neatly. And all I have to do is tell you what? Yeah, you want your cut. Team one. Any more calculators? Now, I didn't tell you which one was T1 or T2, but I can tell you some people. But you can think of it, time has to go slower when you're closer. So if you can answer that with backwards, so you know you picked the wrong value for T1, T2, right? So for you, it's one day. Right? So your time slows down. It's got to be more than one day for somebody way far away. And that's the answer to the question. How many days? Yeah, is the circumference of your black hole. The other one is your circumference where you are. But I'm telling you that you are 1.00001 times the event horizon. So in other words, yeah, subtract it from one to the square root, and then you just gotta pick one, maybe one over that, get it. So hopefully everybody's doing this and saying, oh, it's 1.0001, so that's one over that. Right, because you're bigger than CB, you're further away from CB, then you take 1 minus that, then the square root of that, then it's 1 over that, and you hopefully you end up with a number, probably about 1,000. I use the exact equations to pull mine out, rather than the shortened version you've got. But you should have about 1,000, am I correct?
Yeah.
1,000 eggs. Think of this. You've just invented a time machine. Take one spaceship. Have the spaceship go closer to the event horizon. Have it hover there. Hovers there for 1 day and then comes back out. The rest of the universe is about 3 years further away. For them, you spent 3 years visiting the black hole. For you, it was only 1 day. Okay, now. I'm telling you about this business proposition, right? You can have to do time travels or us, right? So any idea I give you, I usually take 10%. So once you get the business running, right, I'll give you my email address and you can just send me the residual checks. Okay? And I do take a ask for it. There we go. If you hovered here, visible light would appear in what wavelength? So E for emitted, R for received. So these equations are collapsing from part of the Schwarzschild metric I gave you. You're just modifying them around a bit to show you how you can use the map. And this map tells them what you see. Hopefully, you would have got something of that scale, which is in the X-rays. Now, what about visiting a black hole? Right. There you are, with your buddy. That's the effect that your buddy would basically see. I'm going to go collapsing in. Right. Experiencing acceleration, a stretching, and a fading to black. Okay. Not a good thing to do. Now, we have a precise scientific name for what occurs to you. You're the one falling in. We actually have a mathematical precise, it took many years to figure this thing out, to explain what happens to you if you're the ones who do fall in. It's called spaghettification. Very interesting. This is this formula here. Again, I'm giving you these things so you can play with the numbers on your own. This tells the acceleration difference between your head and your foot. So between the head and the feet, you feel an acceleration. Now, I simplified it out here to register proportionality. The change in acceleration means the difference in acceleration you feel between your head and your feet. Remember, the greater the distance, the difference, the more you stretched. It is proportional to 1/√ of the mass of the black hole. This is very interesting. It's counterintuitive. It means that if you have a supermassive black hole, billions of solar mass black holes, you can actually visit, you pass through the event horizon. Remember, once you go through the event horizon, you're not getting out. You can pass through the event horizon, but you will not feel very many tidal forces yet. You will actually, you can actually get, if you get a black hole with the order of magnitude of the size of a galaxy, you can live for years inside by passing through the event horizon. Remember, you're still going in toward the singularity, but you can live for years. Only the last moment will the tidal forces be so intense that it will stretch you to instant spaghetti. And it will be faster than your neurons can transmit it, so you wouldn't feel a thing. Can you calculate the tidal forces? You can calculate this. Yeah, you can calculate the tidal forces, right? But you can, this one, we have to calculate the difference between the tidal forces, so which is the change in acceleration, which is more important. Because that's the process you want to do. But yeah, mathematically, you can calculate the tidal forces. Yes?
Would you say those two represent?
They just represent the acceleration, the difference between acceleration and your curve. What is the difference? That's delta means difference?
Each piece represents a different
so we're just looking at what is the change in acceleration. So the change in acceleration. And this actually gives you a numerical value description, a nice proportionality. A small black hole, you're toast. Because acceleration, you will feel it so rapidly. Think about the event horizon is a lot closer to the singularity. One way of visualizing it. And therefore, you will be torn apart very, very quickly. Like you would be torn apart even before you got to the event horizon. Because if your feet would be accelerating faster than your head, you'd be stretched this way. And it's no fun. Got a couple of little clips. This is what somebody falling in would actually see. This is actual calculations. You may see Orion Nebula over here before it comes in. So as you're approaching, you would see this void, because nothing can get out of the event horizon, so you can't see any coming out. And you would see this black thing getting bigger and bigger and bigger. If you're orbiting a black hole looking down, this is kind of neat. Kind of looking down, because light is whipping around, similar light is zipping out, and as long as it doesn't fall into the black hole, light can store, escape, and bend. Some of it will go around and come back to you from this direction, some will come back from this direction. So you'll see things that seem to be moving clockwise and counterclockwise. You'll see copies of the same images, one approaching you, one moving away from you. But cool, better than the one with the black thing appearing, right? Looking at the photon sphere. So you're hovering at the photon sphere, kind of looking. Because remember, you have the whole photon sphere, right? You're red light. So you see the stars above you, but you're not seeing anything coming back. But again, you see the different perspectives. Light that's gone around and coming back this way, so light that's going around this way, some light's going around and coming in and coming back. You get all these different perspectives. So it's approaching, but then it seems to disappear. You see the back end coming, almost like what I'm talking about. You see the back of your head, and you move toward it. Here it comes, and there it goes. Okay. Here it comes, there it goes. Stuff like that. So interesting stuff. And then, of course, this is all curving out in perspective. You're falling in. You're looking up. So, this is what you would see. Yeah, I know. You're sitting there seeing the whole universe converge to a little bright spot.
No, but okay.
Exactly. And this has to do with the light cone, it's kind of amazing. So you're falling in, light's coming in, it's all being, remember that cone that you said, that those two right angle things that you saw on the diagram yesterday? Consider rotating that, you've got a cone. And nothing can come from over there, so you're seeing everything coming in, bending in. So this is your perspective. So you're seeing, actually you're seeing stuff behind you come in this way. And so as you get further into the well, right? You get everything stretching further, so the cone becomes smaller and smaller and smaller. And it looks, for you, you just see the most boring thing looking. But it's not boring, I think it's kind of cool. You're watching the whole universe collapse to another point if you're looking behind. Now, I've got a couple of pictures of that was actually done for us, and I want to thank UTA Grass for doing this. Three different images, looking forward, looking sideways, looking backwards. And these are static images. So, and he's done radius as one, your 100 Schwarzschild radius is away. So kind of get the idea. So you're looking forward, right? And here's our galaxy, Milky Way galaxy, right? There's something happening, there's some sort of distortion happening there. This lensing that we were talking about yesterday. Looking sideways, not too exciting, you see the image. Looking backwards, just a nice image of what you see behind you. Let's move us out. Right? Forward, now we're looking forward to get the cool look. So everybody's in the front of the ship looking forward. Right? They're seeing more distortions, they're seeing this black hole up here. That's a great name. Sideways, nothing too much. Backwards, the same guys, so they're all in front. A lot of people are still at the front, seeing the hole get bigger and bigger and bigger, but they're getting bored because people are now seeing it on the side window. You start to see some sort of distortion happening. The fat guy in the back window, same old, same old. The forward guy see nothing now. Right? And we're still outside the Schwarzschild radius. But the sideways guys are seeing a bit of nothing. And the fat guys see the same old again. 1.5, look where we are at, 1.5. There we go, perfect, nice little horizon. Maybe something in the back, but you're not quite sure. People are convincing themselves.
Oh.
And that's. So you can see how they all kind of go together, right? So you can see the difference. So let's talk, summarize the anatomy. Singularity, horizon, photosphere, 1.5 times. It all comes from the Schwarzschild solution, and this is the simplest type of a black hole. Just remember, a black hole has the same mass, a two solar mass black hole has the same mass as two solar mass. Our sun, if it was a black hole, would have the same mass as a black hole. If I don't like that and turned our sun into a black hole, which cannot occur, we would not know about it until about 8 minutes, and then what would we notice? No more light. That was it. The Earth is still staying in orbit. The mass stays the same. The dynamics stay the same. It's just all of a sudden not light anymore. Eventually, we die because of black holes. Types of black holes. You can charge a black hole. That means you can actually make a charge more positive or more negative. And if you do that, the charge is creating another horizon. Now you have two horizons, an inner horizon and an outer horizon. The more charge you give it, the closer the two horizons actually come closer and closer and closer, and you don't want to give so much charge, but you need all the charge in the universe to do it. But if you do that, the two horizons would touch. You would get what we call a naked singularity and a lot of energy. It's a lot of energy part that I'm worried about all the energy in the universe to put together, and it has to be released. So, there's that one of those Penrose diagram things, but I guess I don't want to talk about that. This is a cool one. Rotating black hole, sometimes called the pure black hole. Look what we got here. We get two photon spheres. Because it's rotating, we have something called frame drag, some interesting stuff. So it's rotating. So not only do we get one photon sphere, we get two photon spheres. An innie and an outie. We then get a zone called the ergosphere, which has got something which we call a static limit, and then we got an outer horizon. And then we have an inner horizon. We not only do we have one horizon, but two photon spheres, we have two horizons. We have an inner horizon and an outer horizon. And our singularity, I'll use this, but it's hard to see. My next slide has a better picture. See if I've got one. Yeah. This one's got a better picture. My singularity is a donut. It's a torus, mathematically a torus. It's a donut. Donut with a hole in it. Right? You've got two photon spheres. You've got this egg-shaped thing, which we call this the static limit, and we call this the outer horizon right there. And then you have an inner horizon right there, and then we have a singularity. So inner, outer, and this place here is called the ergosphere. This is the frame. Nothing can stay still in the ergosphere. Everything has to move. Itself is rotating, and we do not. You don't have enough power, don't have enough speed to get yourself to stand still. Right? Not even light photons, right? Photons could stand still, don't have enough energy to not stand still if it was going in the opposite direction where it was traveling. Okay. But because now the geometry here is not the Schwarzschild geometry; it's a totally different set of geometry. And because of the geometry, the singularity now is toroidal in shape. Remember I said when you cross the event horizon, the first event horizon, time and space properties kind of switch around? Because you crossed another event horizon, guess what they've done again?
Came back.
Right? Before, you had no choice. It's one horizon, you're going to the singularity. Now, you have to really work hard to get to the singularity. This is where they can have fun with wormholes going close to, going through the hole, playing with it. This is yesterday's talk. We had this negative energy. I like calling it exotic matter, and I'll talk about that in a sec. A lot more fun with these things, a lot more complex mathematically. Per Newman, it's a spinning black hole with charge, looks basically the same, but now it just has charge. Remember I mentioned yesterday that a black hole has no hair? All that means is whatever goes in, if you're inside and it was all crushed back in, you couldn't go backwards and determine what it was. Now, so this is what Wheeler had done. It was it. Black hole has no hair. I really think it has three hairs, right? Mass, angular momentum, and electric charge. I think those are the three hairs that we get. Those are three pieces of information that you can say. Is it spinning? Is it charged? How big is it? If you know those three pieces of information, you can determine the type of black hole. But it's basically saying, if a star, whatever went in, if the star was the shape of a cube, a sphere, or something unusual, it all becomes the same thing inside a black hole. It becomes one and part of the singularity. The zen of black hole dynamics. So let's review. Types of black holes, Schwarzschild produces first equation, which is just based on mass. This is the Billy Ball version. The Riesel-Nordström version came a bit later. We now have electric charge added to my black hole, and in doing so, we created another event horizon. Then how come we used the solution? And you'd think about the 60s, well, some of us were around in the 60s, right? It's not too long ago before somebody could actually figure out the solution to Einstein's equation that just had a bit of a spin. And then a couple years later, they combined those two to come up with spin and electric charge. Some of these things are all in the study. I'm busy scribbling away and stuff like that. This is some of the recent stuff, right? Some of you are working on this. I'm not going to spend too much because I know that some of you are going to do a presentation. Am I right? Some of you are talking about this?
Yeah.
So, I'm going to go over this very quickly. Yes, Hawking was able to produce some statements about entropy in a black hole, and with that, he was able to talk about black holes radiating. So again, these guys are going to talk about this in more detail. I just want to show you a picture to make sure it makes sense for you. me just go to, I think I have one better picture here, because I just want to talk about it. It was thought that black holes, according to general relativity English, black holes do not radiate anything. But a quantum mechanical aspect, because there's a violation of the laws that are taking place. And we don't let violation of laws. How can some object violate the laws? So what Stephen Hawking basically said, based on yesterday's talk, if you have, in the world of quantum, you have these virtual, you basically have matter and antimatter, positron and electron, created, they separate, they join back together again, and as long as you do it within a certain time, nothing's violated. You've got a little window of time they can do it. If you do it in that time, everything is cool. Right? And then, and because they are created and joined themselves back, they're virtually not really real yet. Now, what would happen if one of them was created just outside the event horizon? They're created outside the event horizon, and the tidal forces separate. So one of them falls inside. If it's inside, guess what it can't do? Get out. And the other one, because it's already out and it borrowed energy from the black hole to pull themselves apart, it says, where's my partner? Where's my partner? It's gone. I'm real. I'm a real particle now, not the ghost, right? Basically, in quantum science, that is what happened. The poor dude going in says, oh my goodness.
You know who just said you can't have violations of laws?
Yes.
When you were talking yesterday about how Einstein tried to put in his cosmological constant because he thought that the laws were right and that he was wrong, how do we know that the laws aren't wrong here?
We don't. Right. The quantum physicists do this, trying to sit there and say, well, here's Baker law with thermodynamics, right? The entropy effect. There's lots of information that's going to happen here. How can I come up with an explanation that allows a black hole not to violate this? This is an explanation. String guys, which I have one over here, coming up, this is just a test, but you guys can talk about that later on, right? String guys have their explanation of how it doesn't violate. So they have little strings, right, sitting on a D brain, D pi brain, coming in and colliding and popping out another string, and that's how they explain this non-violation, this radiation. And the radiation that you see coming from a black hole is one quarter. The wavelength is one quarter of the circumference of a black hole. That means a big black hole will radiate basically not a very energetic particle. So it won't glow in this beautiful, glowing, bright light that some people show it. It'd be releasing energy in the length of the order of radio waves. The smaller the black hole, the shorter the wavelength, then we start to see. So a really small black hole, very, very tiny, 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 tiny black hole, talking sizes of molecular size, would radiate very quickly and then release a lot of energy. Right? So now it takes a long time. One of the equations that I showed you, which is on the sheet, says that for a black hole to radiate all its energy away would take longer than the age of the universe. Right. Well, black holes real. So we've got about 20 minutes. Remember, mathematically, we've got the ideas. That kind of makes you play all this stuff. First thing that started to occur was people started looking for black holes. But you can't see the black holes because in their own nature, they're not visible. So what they do is they look at how an object whose mass is bigger than three solar masses, right? Now that's the limit. How it affects anything around it. So if we see things falling in, if we see objects orbiting other objects which we cannot see, then maybe we've got something that could be a candidate for a black hole. Okay, let's have a look. Get my little mouse going here. There it is. So here's a mathematical simulation of something falling in. See how it's getting better? More energy. Some of this modeling, it took some programs to pull computer a long time. These guys be that the event horizon over there is coming out, right? This is what we're looking for. We're looking for things falling in. We're looking for particles even here, bouncing off each other, releasing energy. In fact, energy we expect to be is in the X-ray. So we're looking for a great X-ray source. Because if I was falling into a black hole or an older black hole, I'd be out of X-rays too, right? You just don't want to go inside there. The first verifiable black hole was actually discovered and worked with a person from the University of Toronto. It was Cygnus X1. It ended up seeing, it had a star orbiting, it's about 10 solar masses. It was orbiting another star, which they could see, releasing X-rays. That's what the X stands for. X stands for X-rays. First means the first X-ray source they found in the constellation of Cygnus. And it was actually something orbiting in a binary star system. The two of them were orbiting together, releasing huge amount of X-rays above 3 solar masses, but every optical telescope couldn't see anything there. And it's only in the order of about 6,000 light years, which our telescope should be able to pull out, you know, white dwarf or any sort of star. We should be able to see it. We have the technology to see that. All we could see was X-rays coming from that. Here's some interesting shadow images. So this is a computer simulation there, in this corner. Zoom in. And that's what the computer simulation. This is actual images coming into NGC 6240. And you can see those two things, and they just match the images up. The modeling predicted exactly what the telescopes were seeing. So these two images are in fact identical, but you saw prior to that, the fuzzy things, this is what's making them feel warm and fuzzy. If black holes and elements exist, we should see things like gravitational lensing. I tossed this thing in because we was talked about yesterday, but this may give you a better idea of what's happening with lensing. So as the light goes around the lens, it distorts. And if distorts, you should see these incredible arcs. And right? So you see these arcs right here? Let me use this. These arcs are caused by a large gravitational mass between us and another object. And so we can see multiple images of different galaxies and stars. And sometimes, if the geometry is perfect, we'll get what we call an Einstein ring. That means a perfect, perfect pulsar. What else should we look for? Jets. Jets. Some people like that, some people don't. We don't know much about jets, but it's becoming very, and then it's now laughing. Jets is becoming very important. It's only in the last 5 to 7 years that we're really understanding these things. We're seeing them. We're trying to explain where they come from. All right. So again, black hole stuff orbiting, which is called the accretion disk, and it should radiate. Mathematical models say that, hey, yes, it should radiate. We're not sure. There's about 3 or 4 good theories that try to explain how the jets come along. How does stuff come from the event horizon if nothing can get out of the event horizon? Is it just coming from? Is it just on the surface of? Is it just another zone around it? We're not sure. We're seeing a lot of pictures of these jets. So let's look at some pictures just to kind of show you. This is the best, one of the best images, right? Of using a variety of different telescopes, different frequencies to put it together. This is an incredible picture. Okay, you can see, sometimes you see one because you can only see if it's coming towards us. If it's going away from us, we don't see it, right? Unless we're at an angle where we're seeing it, the light bounce off the jets this way and hitting our telescopes. Cause of galaxy, yes?
Can you go back?
Yeah.
That incredible picture you were talking about. Why are the X-rays at the top? Why are they cut off?
Which one? Why are they... this one here?
No, the bottom one.
This one?
Yeah.
Why are they cut off?
The X-rays, they're coming in from the top.
Well, no, these are the jets. We're seeing, this is multiple, this is not only an X-ray, this is a whole bunch of different things you put together.
Okay.
Right? To emphasize, for certain things, you see things better in X-rays than visible light. So they combine all these things to produce this image, right? A good model, a good theory was, do black holes exist in cores of galaxies? And I'm going to just let this thing run. This is and then I'm going to tie this into another image. So this is, we're zooming into our galactic core here. We're using our different telescopes, looking in to an area called Sagittarius A, using different telescopes, and we're just pulling in. So we're looking deep into our core, right? Sagittarius A. Then we started trying to take pictures. It's going to, this animation is of course not what you see. We then take these pictures, because we know there's a black hole there. We're seeing this X-ray coming out. Then we take pictures of a variety of years, same area. And then we put it together by tracking what's happening. And when we do that, right, we resolve all these strange objects. And then we look at how these objects are moving. Some of them are masses, which are millions of solar masses. Remember, this is our own core of our own galaxy. Some of these are stars. We start tracking, and we notice that these guys are all orbiting something. These are different positions. And they all seem to be orbiting, or this guy seems to be orbiting something that's right down here. The star is moving around this object, which is millions of solar masses, but we're seeing it only in the X-ray range. Looks like it added to me. This is what it looks like when you put it all into an animation and run the time forward. This is happening in our galactic core. Those are the years up there, and they're going to project it to the future in a second. So we're going to zoom in so you can actually see. We're looking at 10 light days across. You can see what's happening. This is what has happened to the stars. This is how they're moving. There is something there. Now, we can see we're projecting in the future, and it repeats itself. So, this is the core of our own galaxy. We've got a supermassive black hole. More evidence. We're seeing microquasars releasing energy. So again, we're looking at snippets of evidence. We're seeing things in the X-ray sources that we cannot explain in terms of normal stellar motion. Something is occurring. We're finding an interesting relationship between the dynamics and the mass of a black hole and the style of galaxy. When we talked about this one of the earlier lectures, that the structure of a galaxy determines symbiotically with the mass of a black hole. So all galaxies have black holes. In fact, the energy we're seeing from quasars are coming from black holes. Run animation here. What happens? Interesting models to explain graphically. Frame dragging is another interesting. This is the frame dragging gravitational. This is the hottest topic now for astronomers. Right? They're building, and I got a picture in a second of some incredible telescopes, special type telescopes being built to look for gravitational waves. I'll let you watch the cool graph. Again, frame dragging along with two wonderful accretion disks with black holes in the center, doing what black holes like to do, the black hole dance of death. Releasing these gravitational waves. So this is a consequence of general relativity. Most countries are incorporating or building gravitational wave detectors. Now, we have two in Italy, Nautilus, and these are, ones are really kind of trying to time, they have the Riga and then the Nautilus. This is, they both look identical, one's yellow, one's green, this one's opened up, so you can see this huge piece of metal that's looking to see if a gravitational wave will come through. Gravitational waves are polarized, just like light. There's two types of gravitational waves. They're going to look for a specific signature, so that if it does come through, it should make the bar ring. And they're looking for this type of ringing in the bars. But I don't think it'll be very successful, but we're going to try. U.S. has two of these LIGO detectors. Each one of these arms is about 4 kilometers long. And it's like the interferometer, right? Michel Morley interferometer, if you've read about that. Two perpendicular things crossing. And if a wave goes through, it will change the length of one of the paths, and it should show as an interference pattern on a computer screen that they're using to match this. They just got permission, and they're building a laser, which is the laser interferometer, which is called the LISA system, which is going to go up in about 2013. They've got permission to build this thing. It's going to be, each of these detectors, each of these things that shoot out lasers, are going to be about 5 million kilometers apart. Why so far apart? Why so active? Gravitational waves will only distort something, one part, in 10 to the 21. Let's put that in reality. It's like me using my telescope and measuring the distance to Saturn. And the distance to Saturn has to move close to me by one hydrogen atom and further back. That is the resolution that these things have to pull out. Okay? The Big Bang inflation theory, remember we talked about that? It's also going to produce gravitational waves, but they're even going to be smaller, so they're going to be even beyond the capabilities of the LISA system. Right? But if somebody can detect gravitational waves that were corresponding to the wavelength of the inflationary, the Big Bang, and that component that we talked about, we would then have verification, another verification of inflation.
Aren't they able to detect gravitational waves and gamma ray bursts?
But they can't detect, yeah, anything that's massive that moves. Black holes, colliding black holes, colliding neutron stars, gamma ray bursts, which we're not 100% perfectly sure what they really are, we're getting closer and closer, but anything that releases a lot of gravitational movement of mass will produce gravitational mass.
When the supernova very, very near us produces the gravitational waves, the detectors are on?
Well, they won't. The dying problem is the detector will still be off. Right, because but they don't know when the supernova is going to go supernova, right?
No, sometimes they will. I heard that it was a supernova very, very close to our galaxy.
Right. No, I've not heard them. We've got a whole array of telescopes, satellites, trying to figure out when supernovas go. We don't even know. They catch us by surprise all the time.
I know, I heard that the detectors of gravitational waves that are two in the time are both turned off. So I
wouldn't see why they would even worry about it. I mean, it is so hard to turn these things on and correlate it. They were having cars hundreds of miles away affecting them. So just turning it off and turning it back on is it. So I'm not sure of that myself. All right, some strange predictions. Huge energy outbursts, maybe gamma ray bursts that we're talking about, right? Are going to be coming from here. This is actually some of the stuff that's just coming up in the last couple of months of imaging and of theories that kind of explain where these huge energy outbursts are coming from. So it produces these, maybe gamma ray bursts are part and parcel of black holes. We talked about wormholes. Here's my version of a wormhole. There we go. Down and up, save the day. Right? So rather than following the universe around this way, if you went through the singularity, the toroidal singularity, remember, just by a photon going through the wormhole would crack the wormhole. So you need, I call it exotic matter. So all ships should be coated in this exotic matter of the skin to make the wormhole big enough and not collapse on itself. Right? And science fiction writers love it because you can go from point A to point B with minimal special effects. Yeah, quasar is an early generation galaxy. That's what, and that clears up, because we thought lasers was the core stars in our own galaxy, so it's all quasi stars. But they end up being further galaxies. We're looking back in time and what the early formation of galaxies look like. And there, that gives us a clue that it's a symbiosis, that these black holes were all involved in there, so the black holes and galaxy formation happen together. Yes?
What is a white hole?
White hole is the other end of the black hole.
Have you ever found one?
Well, that's what yesterday we were talking about, trying to find things coming out of nowhere. They will come out of white hole. So no, we haven't found anything yet. Naked singularity, remember when I said the two horizons touch? This is what you get. You would actually have a black hole about to arrive. This way you could actually get closer and see what's happening. Some predictions have been coming out from the early Big Bang. You saw these little singularities popping out. But the rules are so chaotic, you could have things like I got here. Somebody say television sets to bus of Abraham Lincoln could come flying out of this singularity, right? The rules have really gone haywire. Time travel, again, flipping through the total thing. Remember I said time and space all play, all that little stuff? If you don't necessarily know where you're going to pop out, there's no guarantee you know when you're going to pop out. Right? Take a spinning black hole, which is dragging stuff around. Build this device around it, so you make sure you have a small enough black hole. Build this device around it. Lower stuff into the spinning part, right? Not into the horizon, because you know if it goes in the horizon, it ain't coming out. Into the spinning part, and you can actually pull out energy. So there are people who sit there and produce beautiful energy-deriving devices. Oh yeah, and the black holes start to shrink. If you take away energy, it has to shrink. But if it's eating stuff, then it has to grow. So it's probably eating more stuff than it would be losing energy. So when we talk about a black hole evaporating, that's assuming it's not eating anything else. And of course, this is where I have to be off, because this is where, from general relativistic perspectives, my singularity is a mathematical point. The quantum world is going to change this into something called quantum foam, and that would be like a transversing hole of quantum foam, and that's some of the fun time travel and all this other stuff in multiple universes. Hopefully this is where some people are talking to you about in the next lecture. There we go. Suddenly, the force is not yet fully understood. Darren Dusty's apartment became the center of a new black hole. And we'll end it there. There you go, guys. Incredible journey. All I want you to get out of this is to sit there and say, wow, there's a lot of cool stuff. I'm going to go back and I'm going to study it. Read it, have fun with it. Right? It took people 10, 12 years. But I'm going to hand out this. Mark, give me a hand. These are questions that you have to work on now. Maybe you can have a look at them. Information. Solutions for those of you who so feel like that you're going to work on me today or tomorrow.
I'll start at the spot.
Yeah, I can do this. 2, 3.